Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Hey, listeners, thanks so much for joining me on the Negotiations Ninja podcast. You've got Mark here. Today, I've got Tarek and Kevin from an amazing company called Fair Market. They are a machine learning-based company that helps organizations peel back their tail spend and automates that entire process. Cool thing about it, and I'm sure you know this already based on the Pareto principle, is that may be where the smallest amount of spend is for you, but it is certainly where the largest amount of data is. So in terms of understanding data and understanding data points, it's where all the gravy is. I want you to listen very carefully to this because these guys are kicking ass in the machine learning world and figuring out how to automate negotiation and procurement in a way that I haven't seen done before. So thank you so much for them joining us, and thank you so much to you for listening. Highly encourage you to reach out to them. Enjoy. Kevin and Tarek, how are you?
Mark, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing really well, guys. It's a fantastic day here in cold, blustery Calgary, Alberta, where, you know, temperatures have decided to drop. But I'm feeling like it's owed to me because I was just spending some time in Tampa where it was really, really hot. So, you know, I had it coming.
We have the same cold weather, but it's now football season in Boston. So I think as a company based here, we're obligated to bring up the great win from the Patriots last night.
And that Gronkowski's still on the fence.
Boo, Patriots, boo. Oh my goodness, the worst. The worst. Typical Patriots, guys. Just, yeah, oh, we won again. Oh, yeah, it's really hard being a Patriots fan, yeah.
Super excited.
Why don't you try being a Bucks fan for a while and then see how you feel?
Next topic, please.
Awesome. Well, I'm pumped to have you guys on because we've been talking about automation and negotiation for quite some time, and you guys live and breathe automation with all the work that you're doing. So before we get into it, maybe for the listeners who don't know about you, maybe just give them a little bit of background as to who you guys are.
Yep. So we're a machine learning based SaaS platform. We built a product and platform that's targeted towards non-strategic spend, also tail spend. So for a lot of our customers, it's the 80% of transactions they do that covers about 20% of their budget. What we found over the last 3 years, and we're founded in Boston, but been expanding out to several Fortune 500 companies, is that they just don't have the time or the resources to focus on these non-strategic purchases. Over the last 10, 15 years, they've digitalized, they've put their SAP, their Oracle, their consultants, their people on the large, complex strategic initiatives. But as a result, sacrificing potentially price, vendor risk, and clean data when taking a look at all these other transactions. So for us, it was kind of exploratory in the first couple of years. Now we've started to hit stride, working with companies like ServiceNow, Mass Bay Transit Authority, Boston University, to help to automate a lot of the processes around it, while mainly focusing on the KPIs and the business outcomes that the executives we're working with really want to focus on.
Yeah, and I mean, over the last 2-3 years, we've seen massive jumps in machine learning and AI, especially when like applied to the procurement side of the house. But many companies are looking at that going, okay, I don't even know what those things mean. So how can companies start to leverage automation, maybe at a lower level, to start unlocking human decision-making ability and negotiation and stuff like that?
Yeah, so this is the exciting part about the space we play in, the space of tail spend or non-complex purchases. It makes up the vast majority of your data. And what we see a lot of customers have in this space, especially when you're looking at enterprises, is data is lost, the metadata. So think about it. If you're doing three bids and a buy, there's also 6, 8, 9 other bids that you're just jettisoning the information, or even on three bids and a buy, you're losing that. But you're also losing information like delivery time, all of payment terms, all of this information that you could actually be acting upon. That consists of the space that Fair Market occupies. And just looking retroactively, we see a lot of people in the space now that say they use machine learning, or they might use machine learning, but it's really looking retroactively at this data, but it's not actually taking decisions on the data. And fortunately, being in Boston, you know, we're starting to hire some of these people, but we have the best, you know, natural language processing students in the world doing their postdocs here in town. But also, you know, coming up with the best and brightest algorithms for machine learning that can actually start to manipulate the data. And that's really what the core competency of Fair Market is as we look to the future.
Love it. And so if you were going to define machine learning for the listeners, what would you define machine learning as?
Yeah, I really boil it down. You know, I was a chemistry major in college, but I also wrestled, so I got a few bumps in the head along the way. I say it's just taking a mathematical guess on assumptions or data, because you're really just using statistics to figure out if this can, you know, if this is the probability, if there's within a 90% chance or accuracy that this is right. But the really exciting thing is when you look at like neural networks and you look at some of the work Google's been doing with language, whether it's syntax or semantics, you can actually start to see like being able to train these models so that you're actually starting to map out this data. And it's not just taking a guess, it's actually making decisions, which is what we're focused on here at Fair Market.
And Mark, because you're asking as well, how's it leading to automation or how's it being applied? We go to a lot of the conferences and we hear a lot of the speakers that talk about the ML, AI, the RPA, like how blockchain can be used. And everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people that we hear from, they're talking about it almost in like a full Skynet mentality of like, let's automate right. everything. Let's take people out of the equation. Let's augment the human kind of workforce within procurement. And although fast forward 8, 9, 10 years, yeah, definitely potentially applicable. What we try to do is kind of take this technology, but put it into like manageable like chunks or blocks of where we want to direct it towards. Instead of saying everything across the board, let's point it at three activities that are repetitive today that have a lot of data, whether structured or unstructured. And then once again, align it to what's the outcome that the team's looking to get. So instead of saying, hey, this is going to be an ML strategy or AI across everything, no, let's do in the first year or two. This is really where we're going to apply it. And then as we gain the trust, as we gain the credibility, look to expand up and out from that initial stronghold.
Love it. And when we're thinking about like negotiation and how some of these tools could potentially help us, what do you guys see as like the biggest gaps in the negotiation process or maybe negotiation in general with people that maybe machine learning or AI can help with?
I think the biggest thing is nothing's really recorded. So a lot of like even the negotiations we get in with vendors of ours, like our calls aren't recorded. Our syntax of like how we're talking, the words we use, the phrases, that's not recorded. I was actually meeting earlier today with an engineer in town that we're trying to recruit. They do a lot of conversations. That's the whole focus of their business. But the thing is they have to have the at least transcripts or the conversations to be able to use the data. And what we see a lot of times is there's no records of this being done.
Yeah. And then on the flip side of that, I mean, working with some organizations that are $1 billion revenue a year, it's really just enabling the collaboration of data. And whether it's structured or unstructured across different teams, different geos, or just across different departments, we sit on site with a lot of our customers, especially when we first get working with them, and just see kind of the manual tasks, what's available to them, whether it's Excel, whether it's in their SAP or Oracle or Coupa or Workday system. And there's no easy way to correlate it all together. And then the bigger challenge is, even if you were to get all the information from 100 different buyers or 100 different teams across the globe, the question is what do we do with it? So first, you have to generate insights to say, okay, what does it mean? And then what are the actions we want to take on it? And then the harder part is like, how do you actually act on it? Because I haven't met any CPOs or directors of procurement that say, we have all this additional staff. We're looking for projects to fill their time up with. It's all, no, we're at 100% capacity. We're trying to put our team on the most strategic to prioritize. So going off and now taking this data and saying, okay, we want to have a whole new initiative, it's almost and virtually impossible unless you're able to have the technology review the data and then actually be proactive and act on it.
It's pretty neat though. Like you see now in schools and universities, just language processing. So being able to start parsing words, breaking them up, being able to, you know, disambiguate even how phrases are to understand the relation to, you know, previous topics. Something that's really a really neat technology, their startup, but it's called Grammarly. They help parse.
Oh, I love Grammarly.
Yeah. And, you know, we're starting to see whether it's contract management, whether it's pricing, whether it's RFPs, RFQs, taking that same type of intelligence that a tool like Grammarly has, but into the, you know, negotiation process is really impactful, I think, for the business. Because, you know, I think the day of negotiations, just be shooting from the hip, having a playbook, I think that's gone. I think what we're going to see more and more is that tools that are enabled are going to be able to actually help you understand what phrase or what how you should point the conversation.
Yeah, love it. Have you guys, do you guys know Matt Dixon at Tether?
We do not.
Nope.
Okay, you need to, you just as a side note, you guys need to speak to Matt. He co-authored a book called The Challenger Sale with Brent Adamson, and he was one of the lead research scientists at Gartner. He has since left and done a bunch of other things, but now he's the chief product officer, I think, at, yeah, I think that's his title, at a company called Tether, and they have AI conversational technology that helps sales and marketing teams identify inflection points in voices and stuff like that to be able to simulate different routes in a sales conversation. So anyway, I think that would really tie in well with what you guys are talking about. And whenever anyone speaks about like machine learning or AI and stuff like that, I look at what you guys are doing and I look at, you know, the stuff that Tether is doing. It just blows me away at how advanced some companies have already become in really taking away human error when it comes to sort of the negotiation aspect of things. And I think that's really where like the advances can really help us, because so often we go into negotiations or we go into like complex processes like tailspin, and there's a lot of bias and there's a lot of human error that's involved in it. And you guys just take the vast majority of that stuff away.
And Mark, so one thing that's interesting is you brought the Challenger Sale, which is an incredible book in sales strategy. If we're taking a look at how other industries are actually applying AI and ML to improve, say, what's similar to like a negotiation in real time, have you heard of a company called Gong.io?
Yeah.
So Gong.io, I mean, there's a handful of different companies like that where in real time it's evaluating and assessing what are our top performing sales reps doing, from whether it's inflection point on a call, whether it's the questions they're asking, whether it's the percentage of time they're talking versus the customer. It could even be like the tonality of their voice. And then they start to correlate and say, okay, what are the best methods and styles of our top performing reps? And they use that proactively to train their team. So I do foresee down the road, if we're talking about how do we automate, how do we structure more of this process, just to make it less like manual and one-off. I think that's what a lot drives a lot of the complexity is everything's done one-off. Technologies like Gong.io in this space would be really interesting to see.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if we can sort of get over ourselves and the procurement side of things and apply that kind of technology to what we're doing, it's just going to make our negotiations so much better, because it's going to teach us what works and what doesn't work, right? It's just going to provide us the data to say, okay, you screwed that up and here's how you can fix it.
Yeah, I think it stems from like a culture of learning and transformation. And I think, you know, I think that rubs off on like the most innovative companies. You know, I look up a lot to companies like Whirlpool, who built the innovation into their culture. And, you know, even like 3M, right? Like dedicate time for employees to innovate, even in these massive companies. And I think it stems like whether you're innovating in product development, you're innovating in sales and marketing, you also need to innovate in negotiation and teach yourself best practices. You know, what worked with the Challenger Sale won't work 20 years from now because everybody's read the book. So it's continually learning and building that in. And I think that's what companies from an early stage, like I think that's why everybody loves working at a startup, is because it's this culture of learning. But once companies hit a certain point, it's really, you know, and that's what we see from leadership. It's instilling that from the top down and taking a risk in innovative technologies, taking a risk by trying a new negotiation tactic that might not feel good trying it. It's developing those new muscles that you might not have. We see that as the best negotiators, even from us, when we're trying to sign up, say, a Salesforce contract and we're on the negotiation side of the phone.
Calling all multitasking negotiators, I am speaking to you, so listen up. Whether you're listening on your commute or the Peloton or anywhere in between, this is important. Are you looking for ways to increase your procurement productivity and save thousands of dollars? Scout RFP helps to simplify and automate the sourcing process so you can get more done faster. You need to check out Scout RFP at scoutrfp.com/negotiation. I'm going to repeat that. That's scoutrfp.com/negotiation. Stop digging through spreadsheets, emails, and documents for contracts and project information. You are wasting your time and your valuable resources. You need a better tool, and that's Scout. Over 190 global brands like Adobe, Biogen, EasyJet, Salesforce, and Zappos trust Scout RFP's automated sourcing and supplier engagement platform. Scout RFP's platform is super easy to use, and most organizations can get up and running in just hours. You need to see for yourself at scoutrfp.com/negotiation. I know Scout. I've used Scout. I trust these guys. Check it out at scoutrfp.com/negotiation. And now back to your show. Yeah, totally agree with you. One of the major issues that people are looking at when they're looking at automation, whether it's, you know, the ML or the AI side of things, is that we don't know what we don't know, right? Like, we don't know what's coming yet. And to that end, what areas of automation really haven't delivered on their potential yet, do you think?
That's a good one. I think a lot of things technology tries to do in the physical world is falling flat on its face. Like, I love using them, but like, have you ever rode one of those Bird or Lime scooters?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you been to Austin, Texas recently?
No.
It's like a zombie land for Bird, Lime, and every scooter in the world. it's supposed to make your commute faster, but you can't even walk down the street without having to step over 25 scooters and the way to go down a block. Another one okay. that we haven't seen, and we on purpose have even stripped it out of our presentations because all everyone wants to talk about, is the application of blockchain across the supply chain and across procurement. Even 3 years ago, when we went to our first couple conferences, if someone even said blockchain, the next 20 questions came about blockchain. So we agree, there's definitely going to be a use case for it, and there definitely is in small pockets. But for as much as the hype and heard everyone talking about, we haven't met any procurement organizations today that, whether it's smart contracts, a lot of people talking about them, haven't seen it, keeping the data on Hyperledger. It could be tracking from the actual origination of where something is being created to where it's shipped. Just haven't seen it come to fruition. So definitely
totally agree with you.
Future, but we're staying away from the topic right now until we feel like it's really a space that we want to double down on. What about you?
Yeah, 100% agree. No, I mean, blockchain for me is like the buzzword that I hate because, I mean, one of the biggest things that I was super pumped about was smart contracts, but I haven't seen an efficient one yet. So
were you psyched about them in December of 2017 or was it after that?
No, yeah. I mean, it was after that because I was like, hey, this is amazing. And like, and I've been pumped for a while. And then eventually my enthusiasm just dropped off, right? It just was like, okay, like nothing's happened yet. I'm not excited anymore. When is this going to happen? And I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will happen, but it's just not there yet.
There's two things in life I can't get rid of. It's my Bitcoin and my Beanie Babies.
Yeah, man. Bitcoin liquidity sucks right now. I feel you. Okay, cool.
They're all over.
So where do you...
It's kind of a nuisance. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Where do you guys see procurement negotiations going in the next 5 years? I mean, now that we've got, you know, super huge advancements that you guys are making in machine learning, I mean, we've got companies that like Gong that are trying to figure out, you know, how to improve on things. We've got companies like Tether that are doing real-time AI evaluations on conversations. Where do you see negotiations going in the next 5 years?
I mean, the hardest thing we see for organizations that we work with, and I'm sure other people like Alex and Stan at Scout or, you know, the Supplari team or even, you know, SAP, everybody sees is just there's not enough resources. It's the trade-off of like, you know, we have more aggressive spending targets. You know, we have these metrics to hit, these KPIs, but I just don't have enough people.
Yeah, so I think... people always need to solve the hard problems that, especially in the next like 4 or 5 years, that just are not repetitive and don't have a lot of clean data around and that have high stakes for the larger ones. But kind of how we foresee it being is that we're giving the management and the executives more control on how they want to kind of scope out how each kind of type of procurement's handled. And it could be saying that, for purchases under a certain size or in a different category, that we want to optimize this for lead time. So how do we put a negotiation? How do we put a template in place that allows us to optimize the lead time with the suppliers that we're engaging with? For some, it might just be strictly on price. Some of them might be on the type of vendors where they're DBEs. But we foresee that kind of coming into one central place. And then the executives could say, how do we manage it? Just because, and everyone that's probably listening to this knows it, like no two purchases are created equal. But if we can start to structure it and bucket it more and then give people the ability to kind of not customized, but configure how they want certain procurements optimized, then I think that's kind of where we give them like the command and control center of how they want to operate their team.
Yeah, I think to Kevin's point, the more structured everything can be and the more data you can retain, the more you can make educated guesses and automate a lot more of the workflow. And that's the challenge is like we just don't see organizations having enough staff or having limited staff productivity and time to be able to handle a lot of these smaller mid-sized negotiations.
And I think the final thing as well on that topic is looking forward like 5 years, I think the end users are going to be a lot more involved in the process. The core role of procurement is to support the end user. Get to a strong price, trusted vendor, make it a fast kind of requisition timeframe because they're supporting the business. And there's kind of an iron curtain right now when the end user puts in requests, what happens in the middle until they actually get it. So I think there's going to be a lot more transparency in that. I think it'll foster a better relationship and have procurement be more of a trusted partner as opposed to we have the end users and then we have procurement. There's going to be a lot more synergies between the teams.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree with that. When we're thinking about, you know, all of the applications of everything that we're doing and the advances that we're making and where we're going to be in like 5 years, trying to get all of these different end user groups involved, one of the things that popped up that you said, and I think this is true over the next 5 years, is we just don't have the people, right? Is it that we don't have the people or we don't have the right people?
Yeah, I mean, the right people is the biggest thing. It's a key, you know.
And who are the right people? Like, are we going to need to change our hiring approach? Do we need to like focus more on data scientists and computer science majors and all that kind of stuff?
No, I think it's really about putting the right people in place that is a team. Like, you know, some of the best engineering leaders in the world, they might not even have an engineering background. They're just a good manager. I think it's more about putting the people in place and the results will come. I don't think in like 5 years, it's going to be this massive leap that everybody thinks it's going to be. I mean, if you look at a lot of like government organizations, they're still on-prem and massive data centers using technology from 96. And I don't think that's going to change in the next 5 years. But really what we see is a change in procurement and sourcing. At least what I see is with the highest growing, you know, tech companies or these companies that are expanding very rapidly, it's procurement and sourcing becomes less of a role of pushing paper and saying, how do I get a better value on my Oracle contract or my SAP contract? It becomes more of a, hey, we're opening this office in Budapest. Help me build this office. Help me source and equip these people with the right tools to accomplish this goal for our business and unit. Or on the flip side, it might be someone like our friend Gene Johnson at LogMeIn, who, you know, her job is helping LogMeIn with a lot of the M&A strategy of how can we make these two businesses operate perfectly together. And how can we make sure that this or that our organization doesn't spit them out? So I think procurement and sourcing has a lot more involved in the future than just negotiating contracts.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely believe that the people that are in the role today have a place kind of 5-6 years to Tarr's point. It doesn't happen overnight. But I do think it needs to be a hybrid. We have people that have done it. They've been in the sea for 15, 20 years. They have a lot of the tribal knowledge. And a lot of them are very good at kind of the change management perspective. Because that's what a big piece of this is. If you want to have any transformation or digitalization initiative, it's not just setting up the process, the effective communication, the tracking against it, but then I think the most compelling thing that someone can have, and for example, Frank Cuomo at Univision Communications does this very well, it's explaining the why. So it's not just, hey, here's what we're doing, or okay, here's what we're doing, and like touching over like loosely the business outputs of the KPIs. It's explaining why it's important for their role, why it's important for the organization, why it's important for their customers. That aligns procurement to the rest of the organization. And that's what truly enables the ability to bring in new technology and have it adopted. So that's most of our champions, customers that we work with, they're incredibly good at telling the why, because those are the people that you need to really transform, whether it's a legacy setup, coming to bear on for 30, 40 years, or a fast-growing tech company that needs someone to be able to level set and say, this is why it's important to focus on it now versus just growth at all costs.
Yeah, agreed. I think one of the, like, well, not one of, definitely one of my biggest pet peeves about most large procurement teams is they can't get out of their own way. They're stuck inside of this mindset of, you know, we're going to do the way things we've always done them. And so they hire these brilliant, you know, data scientists or analysts who are really true analysts, not like junior procurement people who start in an analyst position, but true data analysts. And they come with all these solutions about how to improve things. And they're like, well, we can't really do that. And I just don't get it. Like, why would you hire those people if you didn't want them to do what they know how to do best? So for those procurement leaders that are listening right now, here's my rant for the day. If you hire someone to do a job and they're like an amazing data scientist and they bring solutions to you, let them do that, please. It's the only way you're going to improve, because not letting them do what they're great at to improve your life is holding you back. And by the way, things are moving so quickly right now, you cannot afford to be held back. All right, end rant. I'm off my soapbox.
Perfect. I think it's a management theory, right? Like, you hire people to do the job. You know, whether you agree with this theory or not, Jack Dorsey at Twitter and Square, his theory is that if he ever has to make a decision, he's failed as a manager. I think that's a little extreme in my opinion, but I think ultimately, like, you're hiring these brilliant people to help make decisions and help bring organizational change. And I think a lot of times people aren't willing to just give them the reins and see what they can do.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. Guys, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I think you guys are rock stars and what you're doing right now is incredible. I'm sure that the people listening right now are going to want to follow you online. Most people that I've spoken to don't know about how machine learning can be applied to procurement and negotiations. And that's what you guys do every single day. So how do people follow you online?
Give us a call or just send us an email. Tarek and I will pick up. Go to fairmarket.com to find us online. You can follow us on Twitter as well. But more so, we love to have a conversation to explain to you what we're seeing in the market, how our customers are leveraging us, how they've implemented and had us adopted across the board, and then just what is the strategic initiatives that we're aligning to within their organization. We're always hungry to learn as well.
Yeah, and I don't know if we told you this, but really the proof's in the pudding. We just raised our Series A, $11 million round from Inside Ventures. And you know, we're seeing customers bring organizational change by using our technology and taking a risk on us. And so Kevin hit the nail on the head. I mean, we're always available. If you reach out to us, you'll probably get our cell phone number. We always work on the weekend. So if you ever want to have a talk, we'll be around.
And if you know anyone in Boston or across the country that's looking to join a startup, we're going from 50 to 100 people next year, so feel free to send them our way.
Amazing. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today. Enjoy the rest of the week, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go onto iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.